Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers, and $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Friday edition, Morning Drive. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall here. Steve in for Derek. Great to have you, man.
Good to be here.
NFL fans, don't miss Nashville's best NFL pregame shows. Start your morning off with the kickoff from 7 to 9:30 a.m., followed by the NFL pregame show featuring Jared Stillman, Floyd Reese, and Chris Sanders live from George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. prior to the Titans taking on the Houston Texans. The NFL pregame show is brought to you by Wholesale Link, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, Middle Tennessee Kubota Dealers, and Boomba's Craft Pizza and Tap House. Well, we're going to get to the Titans. The pass rush for both the Texans and the Titans, I think, could be a deciding factor in this game. We're going to get to that in a second, but the name Jared Stillman, you know, we have a lot of names, Steve, on the show for Jared and the GM. I don't know if you know this.
Sure.
Gerald and Coach is one of them.
I am aware of that one.
Yeah, we started with calling him Sprinkles, which I think started from the Belk Bowl, actually, when tight end for Arkansas Jeremy Sprinkle got busted stealing clothes from Belk while at the Belk Bowl. And because Stillman gets all of his tuxedos from Belk, we started calling him Sprinkles. Very long backstory, that one. I think I've called him a human frat paddle before. There's a lot of nicknames. SpongeBob and Mr. Krabs is also a name for the show from 2 to 6. Yesterday, Floyd Reese called Stillman Fairy Tale Boy. Because he was like screaming about, you know, I'm so concerned that Derrick Henry's not going to play. Now you got me all concerned. Should I believe the player or not? And Floyd's just like, whatever, you believe whatever you want, Fairy Tale Boy. So I think Fairy Tale Boy is the new one.
See, I was pretty excited about Sprinkles there for a second because, you know, we're talking about your clothes, but then you move on. But then you move on to Fairy Tale Boy. That one's good.
Fairy Tale Boy.
That one's good. Way to go, Floyd.
Stillman's babysitter, Floyd Reese, also has been known as the babysitter from time to time. So there's a lot of names for the afternoon
what
show.
What is a good movie about a babysitter? So we can call Floyd that.
Is 3 Men and a Baby or whatever? What was that movie with like Tom Selleck back in the 80s?
Right? No, I mean,
is
that's
3 Men and a
Baby.
That's
what
right?
It is, yeah.
I feel like that's, except for it's just Floyd Reese and the baby. I don't know. I don't know a babysitter movie. There's got to be a ton of them out there. I don't know. I'm not really the target demo.
Yeah. Fairy Tale Boy and the Sitter.
Don't tell mom the babysitter's dead, right?
Right.
That's another one. I'm still going with just Fairy Tale Boy.
Yeah.
So he'll be hanging out from 2 to 6
today.
He
needs no other introduction.
He doesn't. All right. So here's the interesting thing. The Houston Texans are one of the worst teams in the NFL at getting pressure on the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
The Titans have been one of the worst offensive lines at protecting the quarterback.
Yes.
Some of that is J.J. Watt's been out. Some of that was Taylor Lewan was out. Now Lewan's back. It feels like the offensive line is better. 0 sacks last week against Oakland. Do you think that was a function of Oakland being where they are and being maybe not as dominant in the front seven? Do you actually, obviously the offensive line from a running game standpoint is really developed. We know that Roger Saffold, that's his strength. Are you do you think that was a sign of growth and development? Because let's be honest, Tannehill's been sacked a lot too.
Yeah.
Or is there concern about this Texans pass rush?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I don't think Oakland's very good at getting after the quarterback. I do think the Titans' offensive line is getting better week by week. Now, they had a long ways to go, so that still doesn't mean they're one of the best offensive right. lines in the league by any means, but they are getting better at this. And I also think Tannehill deserves a ton of credit for being decisive and getting the ball out there. I mean, think about it. The 91-yard touchdown pass, there was pressure.
Mm-hmm.
He got rocked on that play, but he, off the play action, made his drop, got to his point, and let it fly. And he got hit immediately, but he got it out on time, on schedule, and made the right throw. That's what Ryan Tannehill's doing that the little bit of indecisiveness of Marcus Mariota got him killed early on in the season. And so I think you have to continue to see that. I don't worry too much about the pressure coming from the Texans because I don't think they're a great pass rush either. And so the way the Titans are going, I think they're going to be able to handle this weekend.
I tend to agree. We just got like four text messages on the text line, which is open. The game text line, 615-737-1025. Mrs. Doubtfire, the pacifier, Uncle Buck. Just got five straight text messages.
There we go.
I guess those are all babysitter movies. Mrs. Doubtfire, how can we convert?
Yeah.
But that's a nanny movie, right?
Well, I was going to go Mrs. Doubtfire, but I didn't want no disrespect to Floyd Reese on Mrs. Doubtfire.
But it's Robin Williams.
I know.
Robin Williams is a
I was trying to think of a cooler
American
babysitter
hero.
Besides
There's
Mrs.
no cooler babysitter yeah. than Mrs. Doubtfire and Robin Williams. Who's cooler than that?
Yeah, Marquise, you're off on that one.
Yeah.
Mrs. Doubtfire's classic.
I mean, it's a good movie. I'm just saying I was trying to think of like a cool, hip, like...
From a funny and like genuinely loving character standpoint, like there's no better babysitter than Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah,
especially
agreed.
If it's actually Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Look, I love the movie, but I was just trying to think.
I think that's actually a very high compliment to Floyd.
Yes, full stop. Full stop, end of rant. All right, let's get back to the Titans.
Yes.
On the flip side, the Texans' offensive line, their running game is better than people think, but it's just a different style.
Yeah.
They're actually a better rushing team than the Titans on a per-game average and a per-carry average, but it's just different. They don't have the identity as much, although Carlos Hyde's about 1,000-yard back. Duke Johnson can change a pace, mm-hmm. and then Watson just does things when it breaks down. That's how they collect those yards. It's not the same as the way the Titans want to do it with an identity. So their offensive line, without Titus Howard, the right tackle, their first-round pick, has been it's not as good, but Laremy Tunsil has clearly fixed the backside for Deshaun Watson. I think the one area of advantage is as this Titans team, especially Harold Landry, as he has developed into a dependable series-in, series-out, game-changing player, the way I trust Dean Pease to develop a pass rush, whether it's the safety blitzes, Logan Ryan off the edge, a corner blitz, Rashawn Evans, Jayon Brown, whatever it is, I think the one area where the Texans, among a few others, I think the one area where if you are going to stop Deshaun Watson in the Texans offense with a bum secondary, you better be able to get pressure on the quarterback. And I think they can. They just got to pick their spots.
I think you're 100% right. You have to be able to. Brayden, you're right. I think you have to affect Deshaun Watson some way because he's too good to be in the pocket and just have all day to throw back there. Most NFL quarterbacks are, but Deshaun Watson is certainly in that category. You've got to be able to get after him, and that's a real concern to me in this game because how healthy are you on the back end? The last couple weeks they've been able to survive against Indianapolis and Oakland with the injuries back there, but you know, we all know Malcolm Butler's out for the year. To me, Adoree Jackson is an individual to watch in this game because he missed last week. He hasn't practiced yet this week. If he's out on Sunday, I have big concerns about this Titans secondary against Houston because of the burners, Fuller, Stills, obviously DeAndre Hopkins is a mm-hmm. beast. Those guys going against Ty Smith, I love Ty Smith. He's made a couple massive plays in the last couple of weeks. But in terms of just pure cornerback coverage skills, I don't want to see him matched up with Will Fuller going down the field. I just don't think that's a good matchup. That's where Adoree Jackson can have a huge impact on this game. So can he play, first of all, and how healthy will he be when he gets out there?
That is
a huge question.
He's been on a stationary bike. I don't see how he plays. But again, I have no information here. I'm just speculating on that. But, you know, like, it's one thing for Kenny Vaccaro, who's practicing. He's in concussion protocol. If he gets cleared, he's in, and boom, we're done, and he plays. Adoree Jackson's, you know, this guy hasn't even been out on a practice field in just a helmet with limited participation. He's just on a bike. So I don't know. LeSean Sims being back is going to help. It appears he should be back.
Yeah. Full participant yesterday, so that's
yeah,
good.
And I think Ty Smith, you know, while he has made two really big plays for this team with the return.
Three, actually, because he's got two forced fumbles.
There you go. And the forced fumble, the one where it spins on the sideline, that actually sort of ended the game.
Right.
You know, Jayon Brown picks it up and runs it back, and that's sort of the end of the game. So some really big plays he's made, but can you count on Ty Smith down in and down out to cover a guy like Will Fuller? Probably not. A guy like DeAndre Hopkins? Well, nobody can do that. Although Malcolm Butler, I think last year, did a really good job on him. It's going to be tough. They're going to have to – I think Imani Hooker's going to have to play a lot of snaps
yeah.
in sort of some – bizarre coverages. They're going to have to play some over-the-top help with these guys. It's going to be complicated, but I trust Dean Pease to handle it.
Yeah, well, and Tremaine Brock is another guy who's going to have to prove why they brought him in here in week 15, or week 14, I guess it was, to put him on the field and play. And Mike Vrabel said you didn't notice him a whole lot last week, which is a good thing from a veteran, but he's going to have to prove that again, that he can walk in and, having only been here for about 10 days,
right,
go out there and help them solve the Texans. So to me, that's the biggest concern, not just for this game, but honestly, it's the rest of the season, Braden.
Yep.
How healthy are they in the secondary? Because at the beginning of the year, I thought the strength of the Titans defense was the secondary and the number of bodies they had to go out there and quality players that they had to go out there. Well, the bodies are being tested now because they're dropping like flies. And when you go up against Watson and those receivers and Breeze and those receivers in each of your final three mm-hmm. games, that to me is the biggest question mark for the Titans here.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And the biggest way to help a secondary, pressure the quarterback. Get after yep. the quarterback. And a healthy Jarrell Casey, Jeffrey Simmons, Harold Landry, maybe you're bringing some unique blitzes with Rashawn Evans or Jayon Brown, which both guys are totally capable of creating havoc in those situations. Again, I think Harold Landry has just been a revelation. He has really turned into a guy that, even on like a first down running play against the Colts where he's shedding a block backside, scraping down the line and stopping it for a 1 yard gain. Like, those are the kind of plays that don't show up and people don't remember, but he's making them more routinely, not to mention the big plays, the sacks and mm-hmm. the forced interception with Kevin Byard and all that stuff. I think Landry is going to have a huge, he has to be the best Harold Landry that he is, because they need him desperately to yep. impact this game. Because if you can impact the game in that area on the front seven, it makes up for so much on the back end. Just ask Tom Brady. You lose the Super Bowl because of a defensive line, not because of anything else the Patriots did in that Super Bowl.
When you talk about the Titans' turnaround this season, everybody's going to focus on the offense, and rightfully so. But I think one of the huge factors is Harold Landry becoming more of an impact player. Statistically, all season long, he's done things for the defense. He's had more sacks. He's been a factor. But I think early on in the season, his sacks and his production almost felt like happenstance. He was, luck isn't the right word, but he was sort of falling into the sacks, or he was falling into the play. Over the last 5 or 6 weeks, he is making plays.
Yep.
He is changing the game. He's changing the dynamic up front. He's got to be able to do that this weekend and for the rest of the season as well.
Yeah, no question about it. So again, we all are worried about the secondary. We know Dean Pease is worried about the secondary. Everybody's focused on it. You know Deshaun Watson's licking his chops. Only one way to stop that, and that is to make them one-dimensional, stop the running game, and pressure the quarterback. It's really not all that complicated. All right, last call for alcohol, Titans fans, all right? If you're not going to show up to this one, when are you going to show up? I want to talk about the flex scheduling as well, if Titans fans have a preference about that, and what do we actually expect? Last chance here, final predictions on what we think the stadium's going to look like, as well as our $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. We've got some answers. What is the toughest or the craziest or worst travel experience you had around Christmas? And we've already got a few at 1025_MD. I have, let's see here, stuck at the regional airport. There's a lot of bullet points in this one here, so just hear every single part of this. Stuck at the regional airport, so not a major airport, mm-hmm. in Arkansas for 18 hours with the wife and three kids, 4 years old, 2 years old, and a newborn. God bless you.
Ooh.
Had to eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner out of the vending machine on Christmas Eve. With those three kids in an airport?
Ouch.
That sounds like absolute hell.
My only question...
That's a good one, Landon.
That is a good one and miserable. My only question, if it's at a regional airport, small enough airport, and probably close enough to either your own home or your in-laws or whatever where you were, why don't you just go home for a little?
Because it wouldn't have been a stopover, right? Like, you would assume it wouldn't have been the stopover.
You're not flying into regional Arkansas airport
right.
to, like, connect to Seattle.
right.
So.
That's an interesting one. I hadn't thought about that. Way to bring it all down, Steve. There you go. Guns on Twitter says...
I'm just trying to help here because that sounds completely awful.
Oh, it sounds terrible. Guns says, crashed my mom's car as I went to visit them at our cousins for the holidays. Didn't have GPS, so I had to print out the old map. Remember I had to print out the old MapQuest directions?
Uh-huh.
Crazy. I leaned over to read. Don't text and drive. I leaned over to read and see where I was on the highway, and bam, no good. Hit the barrier, car totaled. That's brutal.
Wow.
So tweet us at 1025 underscore MD the worst travel holiday experience for Christmas that you guys have had. The winner will get a $100 gift card to a Moments Peace Salon and Day Spa. When we come back, last call for alcohol, Titans fans. You going to show up? We'll get some predictions from Steve and Munson and myself when we return. Morning Drive, ESPN, 1025 The Game. Steve Lehman in for Derek Mason here on a Friday. A huge weekend for the Tennessee Titans. You got the Vols and Memphis on the hard court, of course. Up in Thompson Bowling Arena. You got the Preds back on the ice, 5:30 puck drop tomorrow. Again, little unique start for the Preds there, 5:30 puck drop against the Dallas Stars. A huge game after a 4-3 loss last night to Buffalo on the road. Jack Eichel with a couple of goals. Some crazy individual performances there. Unfortunately, you played a pretty decent game, and you just weren't good enough, and now you're in 11th place, and that's sort of the issue. That's sort of the concern. So we'll get to that with Crispy in the third hour. I know there's been a lot of talk, Steve, about the flexing of these games, and it sounds like the most likeliest scenario is the Saints, if the Titans win this game, that the Saints-Titans game will be flexed into Sunday night 2 weeks from now.
I think that's right.
I don't think, unless the entire division championship is hanging in the balance on the final weekend, I don't see them flexing them into the Sunday night 2 weeks in a row. So they might be waiting to find out I don't know what they're going to decide. I'd like to know what Titans fans would like. Would you want that Sunday night game in Houston to be on flexed Sunday night television, or do you want the Saints game at home flexed into Sunday night television? I don't know which Titans fans would like.
See, I honestly think from a Titans perspective, the best would be the Saints at home because it amplifies that atmosphere, and it will – I mean, it won't diminish the atmosphere if the division's on the line in Houston – but, you know, a little less time for Texans fans to be lubricated, shall we say, before a nighttime game down there. Maybe that stadium, NRG Stadium's a little bit less loud, helps you out as the road team. So I think the perfect scenario is to get the game against the Saints. And I think you're exactly right. That's the more likely one at this point, because it's not just what the game means for the Titans, but you have to look at the other games that it's up against. And when you look at Week 17, I know they're not very good teams, but in all likelihood, the NFC East is going to be decided between Dallas and Philadelphia in Week 17. Those are two of the four largest media markets in the country, or two of the five largest media markets in the country. I sort of can't imagine them not taking that game. And there's a couple other games that have massive implications from the final week of the season.
That's next week, Dallas and Philly.
Oh,
is it? It's not Week 17. Yeah, they both play like gimmies. They both play... Dallas plays the Redskins in the final week, and Eagles play the Giants, I think, in the final week. So they both like have wins in the final week. So the division title probably is that game, but I think it's Week 16. And so,
I was confused on
but
that.
But I don't think they would flex Dallas 2 weeks in a row either, being the big brand that it is. So I agree. The other question we had yesterday on the show, and I want to get your thoughts on this before we get to what the stadium will look like on Sunday and Teron Davenport here in a few minutes, is – I actually think getting this, I asked about which week, week 15 or week 17, do you want to play at home against the Texans? And I actually think it's better this way. I think traditionally you would think, no, I want the final week where everything could be on the line at home. But I think there's a chance you're healthier, both Derrick Henry and the secondary at that stage.
Yep.
I think there's you are so hot right now to maintain momentum. This game sets you up for the final two games. And you are more banged up, and you quote unquote need the crowd more. I think this week, I think you could argue that it's better that they get the home game this weekend because of where they at from a health standpoint.
There's no question in my mind, because think about it just this way: if you win this weekend, now you're down to a two game schedule in which you probably only need to win one of them to get in. Probably there's other scenarios out there, but in all likelihood, you need to go one of two if you win this weekend. If you lose this weekend, now you're talking about a must-win against the Saints, who, by the way, have already won their division. They're a pretty good team. And then going on the road to Houston winning. It's just a much more difficult ask. So I'm with you. I think this game is sort of the pivotal swing game. When we come in on Monday morning, you're either going to be riding high thinking...
Division championship.
The Titans are going to win the division and they're going to the playoffs. Or you're going to be thinking, gosh, they may, as well as they've played in the second half of this season, they may be on the outside looking in at the playoffs in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's now also some of this is the Steelers dynamic at play as well, where you've got a third string quarterback and a great defense somehow managing to win these games. It's really bizarre. In fact, both teams with backup quarterbacks, right? Tannehill's started the season as a backup. So
yeah, but Devlin, I mean, who had even heard of Devlin Hodges? Everybody had heard of
old Duck Hodges? You don't know about Duck Hodges?
Everybody had heard of Ryan Tannehill around the league. What Pittsburgh is doing, I don't know how Mike Tomlin is not the NFL coach of the year. He's got to be.
I think if they make the playoffs, you give it to him. If you don't make the playoffs and you finish 9-7, you lose to Baltimore.
Sure.
Hey, you did a great job, but the reason you missed the playoffs 2 years in a row.
But when they were 0-2 and they had the injuries that they had, I think people were looking at the Steelers like, this team's going to go 4-12 or 5-11. This is going to be the worst Steelers team in recent memory.
Yeah.
And he's going to get them to, at minimum, a winning record and maybe into the playoffs here.
So we talked a lot all week, all season, all year, all 22 years that I've lived here. Well, I guess not. Maybe since the original iteration of the Titans left, when Steve McNair retired, you know, Derek Mason left, and all that era of guys were gone. Since that era, I think we've been asking the question, sort of, what is this team with the fans? What is the relationship like? I know that they've been some crazy individual games along the way that have been crazy atmospheres and great games and great moments. But there's also been a lot of not-so-great atmospheres and moments. And some of that is the Titans' fault for not endearing themselves and connecting with their fans for a while. Having a stadium that's, let's face it, totally antiquated when you compare it to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta or any of these big...
Although
huge...
I was just in Oakland. Titans fans be happy.
Well, there's guess where the Raiders are playing next year?
Yeah, they're moving to Vegas.
In one of those big, new, shiny vehicles that's parked in Vegas. That O.co or whatever it's called now, the Coliseum, is terrible. There's no question about that. Did it smell like sewage, by the way?
Yes.
Had it rained? Okay.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, it smells like sewage the entire time.
If you stepped out of the end zone, you actually sunk into the ground.
Yes,
it was like quicksand.
I actually think for all these conversations we've had for all these years, and I actually think week 17 last year was a really good atmosphere despite Marcus not playing.
Yeah.
I think the stadium will be full. I think it's going to be packed. I think it's going to be crazy. The chance to see all the reasons we've talked about why you didn't go to games before. Certainly the cost and the stadium are still a factor in all of this, but all the other reasons are off the table now. The offense is exciting. They're in first place. They're competing for a division title. You know, Amy Adams Strunk has stabilized ownership and done a great job endearing herself to the fans over the last 4 or 5 years. I think all those reasons are now gone. I actually think it's going to be pretty hyped up and pretty packed. I would be disappointed if it's not.
Totally. And I think there's also the opportunity here for Titans fans to truly be a part of this. And that's something that gets lost maybe sometimes, is you just view it as entertainment. But there is something to be said of creating that home field advantage. And here the Texans come rolling in, and nobody talks about the home field advantage at Nissan Stadium anymore, at least from a crowd standpoint. Titans have been pretty good there, amazingly enough. But nobody talks about the noise volume or those sort of things. Here's an opportunity for Titans fans to show up and be loud and impact the game. Even last year at the end of the game, if you remember this, against the Texans, the Titans fans got loud as Deshaun Watson was trying to lead him down the field late in the game.
You're talking about the Blaine Gabbert game, like week 2 or whatever?
Right.
Yeah.
But they forced a couple of false starts.
That's true.
From
yeah,
the Texans
right.
in that game. And that was a crowd of, I don't know, 50,000, 55,000 or something like that. It wasn't a massive crowd, but the people who were there got into it. If you could get a sold-out Nissan Stadium to have that type of volume, all of a sudden you're talking about the home field advantage that people remember from the old days of the Coliseum, back into the run to the Super Bowl in some of those years. That can pay huge dividends. We talk about affecting Deshaun Watson's, Dean Pease scheming up blitzes, helping out that back end.
Right.
Be loud. Make them have to go on a silent count. Make them impossible to audible at the line of scrimmage. Do those types of things. All of a sudden, you become the 12th defender for Dean Pease in that defense.
And it sounds, just hearing you say it, it sounds so cliche that we have to ask that. Like,
well, it's just different. People view it as entertainment now. They don't view it as this is my team. I'm part of the team.
That's true. Football is different. You have a job when you go to a stadium, mm-hmm. especially in college football around here or in the Green Bays and the Pittsburghs of the world, the Kansas Cities of the world. It's different. And I think hopefully that the Titans have started to build some of that here. And again, maybe a new stadium would help, but that's a long way off. So we'll get to that bridge when we'll cross that bridge when we get there. I think Titans fans show up. I think it's going to be a great atmosphere. Become the 12th man. Steve's asking you to become the 12th man. How about this? We'll be right back. Teron Davenport going to join us. We'll talk some Titans.
Nice, TD.
We'll get him to break down the whole matchup with the Texans. Coming up, Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. ESPN 102.5 The Game, Morning Drive. Steve Lehman in for Derek Mason. Braden Gall here. Munson producing and on the ones and twos, spinning the hits for our next guest, Teron Davenport, who always has a comment about the music. Teron, your thoughts on Munson's selection today?
Oh, well, you know how we do it.
That's all he needed.
That's the song.
Teron, I know this seems like common sense, but we were just talking about how do you mask the issues in the secondary for the Tennessee Titans against a team with a lot of dynamic receivers and a dynamic quarterback? And the obvious and simple football answer is disrupt the pocket, pressure the quarterback, stop the run, make them one-dimensional. It's the same formula for football for 1,000 years. Are they capable with Harold Landry, Casey Simmons, Evans, Brown, all those guys, Dean Pease's blitzes, are they capable of doing that to help protect and cover the injuries in the secondary?
Well, that's the whole thing. I don't know if this is a week where you want to blitz, because Watson is such a good player when it comes to, you know, making that baseball turn and reversing out of the pocket and getting on the run that way. So you got to be careful when you blitz a guy like Watson. I think really the importance, like every week you want to have a pass rush, but I think this week it's more important to have a tiered pass rush. So you want to have one of your guys coming on the outside get, I don't know, eight yards deep. And then you want to have the other one, you know, coming from the opposite side get 6 to 7 yards deep. And then you have that pass rush in the inside, and that just kind of suffocates the pocket. And that's what you have to do for someone like Watson. You can't give him space to maneuver and operate. And even that guy getting that inside pass rush, it'll be very disciplined, right, where you can't open up a running lane because Watson will take it. So that's really the big thing. And you saw him step up in the pocket and make some plays down the field. That's what he specializes in. So you got to marry that with the DBs plastering and just sticking to the receivers throughout the all the way through the echo of the whistle.
TD, I'm very skeptical based off of what we've seen out there at practice so far this week that Adoree Jackson's going to be able to go again on Sunday, which would be big. If he's out, I guess first off, do you agree with that? But if he's out, who's the guy in the secondary, the one guy that you're going to be watching the most in those matchups to see how it plays out against a Hopkins and a Fuller and a Stills and all those guys from Houston?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the big issue with not having a Dory is you're losing that long speed, right? You're losing that guy that could turn and run step for step with Fuller and Stills. Mm-hmm. That's the big issue. So now, as defensive backs, you know, Tremaine Brock, LaShawn Sims, they're going to have to play off a little bit. You know, Ty Smith, they're going to have to play off a little bit, and that interrupts your opportunity to kind of knock off the timing by having press coverage. Because, I mean, listen, I wouldn't press against Kenny Stills or Will Fuller just because of their ability. Like, if they beat that press, then it's, you know, they could put their hand up like Randy Moss, and it's very likely to be touchdown. So you got to be careful there. So it definitely changes the way you could play those guys because, again, you know, not having a Dory who has all that natural speed, it hurts that secondary.
Teron Davenport joining us here from ESPN covering the Tennessee Titans. Derrick Henry's a guy who's going to play, as he said, he'd play with like half a leg. What do you expect to see from him? How much do you get from him? And how effective is he? Because we all saw the run. You know, when he had about 80 yards, he broke off a 25-yarder, but you could just tell he was in like third gear and he couldn't go to fourth or fifth gear. And he still ended up scoring on that drive, but he clearly was not 100%. What do you expect to get from him this weekend? And what is the risk in playing him and using him this weekend, you know, with two huge games still left on the schedule?
Well, yeah, I think you hit it right there. And he's kind of like a stick shift, right? And, well, now they go up to sixth gear, but You know, he's kind of like that car that isn't able to get into that fifth and sixth gear, and you could see it. So I would say the explosive runs can be limited a little bit more. That may be something that they're going to have to deal with. And it's just when you have that hamstring, I mean, really the best thing is just rest and electronic stimulation. That's the best thing for it. So I don't think it should be too alarming that he didn't practice yesterday or Wednesday, because they are resting it. And he was in there on the treadmill working on that. So I know that to be the case, because we talked about that a little bit. And Derek just said, I mean, he said it, I'm going to go. That's what he said. So he'll definitely be out there, but it's just those explosive runs. I think that's something that you're not going to see as much. And the thing is that's good with him is he's not too much of a stop and start type of running back. He's a guy that starts, right? You don't see him stopping and then cutting and then he'll make that one cut and go upfield, and that's it. So that can help him, as opposed to, you know, being a guy like a LeSean McCoy or someone like that, you know, has to rely on making so many cuts to get yards.
One of the encouraging things to me about him is he's using his physicality now. So if he doesn't even have the breakaway speed on the edge, he's still pounding people downhill. TD, A.J. Brown, obviously a monster game last week. He's had a remarkable rookie season. Is he the number one wide receiver on this team now? And how has he made such a splash as a rookie?
Yeah, I don't think there's a doubt that he's the number one wide receiver. It's funny, actually, in the shower this morning, I was thinking about that. You know, just looking at this receiver core, and I was thinking about Corey Davis and wondering, you know, how he's going to continue to fit. And I just said, well, you know what? This team is in a good place because they have a 1 and a 1A, and that 1 is A.J. Brown. And the way that he's been able to fit, it's the confidence. He came into the league confident. Right, he's always been a confident player. The guy is supremely talented. You know, he was drafted to play professional baseball as well. So there's no mistaking his ability to track the football is outstanding, and just him as a football player. But then what you're seeing is the confidence going from game to game, and not only from game to game, from play to play. And I talked to him about just how he's carrying one positive play over to the next one. And he said that's really a huge thing of confidence. But then he said in week 4 against the Falcons, everything started to slow down for him. And he always felt like he belonged in the league and he would be productive. But he says things start to slow down. And now you're just seeing that confidence skyrocket. And then the thing with him is he naturally has that dog in him, that mentality, that mindset. And he's an alpha. And you could tell, you know, in talking to him and watching him, the guy definitely is suited for the type of impact that he's making, you know, from a personality perspective, talent perspective, and even a study and work ethic perspective. You know, we talked a lot throughout the year about receivers that he watches. You know, Hopkins is one that he watches. Antonio Brown is one that he watches. You know, there are other guys like Chad Johnson. You know, so he's a student of the game. He loves football. And if you talk to Rob Moore, you could really tell that, the wide receiver coach, because, you know, Rob Moore is a guy that played ball himself, and he's working on him with little details as far as getting off the line, you know, not having so much chatter at the line, you know, just get off, stop making so many moves, and even being more explosive in and out of the breaks, at the top of the routes, creating separation, subtle push-offs and tips. It's really helping him, so there is an abundance of things that are putting this guy in a great place. And I think he's in a great situation because this team is throwing the football now, too.
Tron, I'm just glad that on draft night, there is tape and evidence of me calling him Anquan Boldin. I just am glad that there's actual evidence that I said that on the night they drafted him, that this is Anquan Boldin and that he's going to play like Anquan Boldin and the Titans are getting an Anquan Boldin player. I'm just glad there's evidence because no one's going to believe me otherwise, because I'm wrong all the time about everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And I think last week that 16-yard touchdown really showed it, right?
Yeah.
Because you have Darryl Worley hitting him, and not only did A.J. Brown bounce off the tackle, Worley got hurt. You know, so the yards after the catch, and that's something, I mean, in February I was saying this dude, he was my number two receiver in this draft. You know, Kelvin Harmon was my number one. I really liked his game coming out of NC State. But A.J. Brown was my number one slot, number two overall. And I said he and Paris Campbell are the best yards after catch receivers in this draft. And A-Day is showing that. I mean, that's his specialty. So strong through the catch, confident pass catcher. So,
yep.
I mean, we could go till tonight talking about him. That guy, there's a lot of positive with him.
A lot of confidence. Deebo Samuel, not too bad either. Shockingly, both Deebo Samuel and A.J. Brown, really good college players. Amazing how that works when you're a great player at a high level in college and then you turn out to be a good player in the NFL. All right, Teron, what happens on Sunday? Give us a final score. I'm not really in the prediction business, but I'm going to make you do it.
Hey, that's fine. I'm going 30-24, and I think when you look at this offense, it continues to roll. I think Tannehill, which last week I predicted a 300-yard passing game. I don't think he has it this week, but I think he's in the high 250s, 270s, somewhere around there. And I think this is a big week for Jonnu Smith. So watch that. And like I said, 30-24, I think this Titans team wins. They take control of the AFC South division, and they have their own destiny in their hands.
There you go. Wow. Teron Davenport, man, I think that would be one hell of a story Monday morning, that's for sure.
Sure would.
Hey, man, appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Enjoy the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks. See you guys.
See you, Teron.
Teron Davenport, TD there, of course, with Chase McCabe on Friday. You got all kinds of good stuff. Teron all over the podcast, ESPN, writing. You know, you can see him in his nice, he's got his nice jackets on. You got nice jackets, too, when you're out working.
Dude, his blazer game
is very strong.
Awesome.
He's got the lapel flower going every time.
Man, Steve, one time, I can't remember what day this was, but you had on a tan pea coat, and I looked at that, and I was like, man, I've been obsessed with having a tan pea coat.
You know, these guys on TV, they have all the nicest jackets, man. You and TD both have very strong attire game. No question about it.
Well, thank you. To be mentioned in the same conversation as Teron when it comes to clothes is a high compliment.
No, I've used you in defending my attire with my wife before. I'm like, no. Steve Lehman says I can dress like this, and he's on TV all the time. So if he's on TV all the time dressing like this, then I know I can dress like this.
Okay, I don't know what what you're wearing there that you're using me as your.
So we were at a Titans game one time, and I looked over and I said, hey, you can wear like a suit coat with like a nice pair of pants that doesn't match, and it still works, right? And you're like, yeah, you can totally do that.
If
you've got a nice suit jacket, you can wear that with like, because Nashville's, you know, Nashville business is not the same as like other markets' business.
Sure.
People wear like jeans to like business meetings in Nashville. And my wife's like, you can't wear that jacket. It's a suit with these pants. And I'm like, no, Steve Lehman says I can. So I mean,
it depends a little bit what you're going with.
I bring you into my arguments with my wife.
I wouldn't wear like a tan suit jacket with khaki chinos.
No.
You can't pull that off.
Dark jeans with
like
a tan jacket?
But if it's like a navy suit jacket or whatever, you can basically use it as like a blazer.
Right, exactly. Can you use suit jackets as blazers? And your answer was basically yes.
Yeah.
You can kind of do whatever you want these days.
Exactly.
Fashion. And you're a TV guy. No, I respect that.
That's exactly right.
Teron Davenport,
do whatever you want. Just own it.
Exactly.
Just own it.
If you miss any of the show, we have moved our on-demand audio to Apple and Spotify. Search Morning Drive in the Apple or Spotify. Or log on to thegamenashville.com and find our daily audio, rate, review, and subscribe today. I want to ask you one more question about Derrick Henry, and then we'll get to the Preds and the power play. Hal Gill had something interesting to say about it yesterday, and it kind of came true last night again against Buffalo as the Preds lose 4-3. We'll get to all of that when we return on Morning Drive. Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Steve Lehman, Braden Gall. One more quick Titans question before we get to the Preds. Losers last night, 4-3. Now 11th place in the Western Conference, second to last in the Central Division. Didn't play a bad hockey game, just weren't good enough. And we'll get to that. I got Hal Gill yesterday had some interesting thoughts on the power play I wanted to bring up. We'll get to that momentarily. Real quick question about Derrick Henry. Same one I asked of Teron Davenport to you, Steve, and that is, What percent of Derrick Henry do we expect to get on Sunday, and what is the risk? There is honest risk here because a hamstring can pop at any moment and you're just done. Look at Mike Evans for the Buccaneers. What is the risk, you know, in balancing using him versus trying to protect him from himself, because we know he wants to go. So
I'll answer the second question first. I think there is risk. You're right. It could go at any moment, and then you're just screwed. The season's probably over if you don't have Derrick Henry down the stretch. But you can't afford to rest him right now because the game's massive. This is right. If you rest him and you lose on Sunday, the game may be over anyway. So you've got to play Derrick Henry if he's able to go at all. And here's the thing that I like about Henry, and I piggybacked off of Teron a little bit with this in the last segment, but I'll expand on it now, is a couple years ago, a Derrick Henry with a shaky hamstring would really worry me, because as big as he was always more comfortable being on the edge. He wanted to get outside and use his speed. Right. He wanted to run by you and go for the home run.
But now,
a year ago, right, when he got on the run in December and he's carried it all season long, he's willing to be 6'3", 248 pounds. And even last week, he didn't really have that explosive run, but he tops 100 yards because he's getting 4 and 5 yards a carry. Derrick Henry, to me, on Sunday, even if he's not explosive and doesn't have the fifth or the sixth gear that Teron was talking about, I think he can just wear on the Texans for 20 carries, getting 4 to 5 yards a pop,
yep,
and that can be very effective, as effective as they need him to be.
The touchdown run where he dives and gets the ball over the goal line, you can tell he's not 100%, but he just sort of is willing his way into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not methodical or slow, because Derrick Henry doesn't do anything that's slow, but it's just, you can tell it's not that elite-level explosiveness that he's got. And so we'll see what he does. Again, the risk is there, and I don't know what kind of chances I give them if he's not in the game in week 16 or 17, but we shall see. Yesterday, Hal Gill was on the show. Preds lose last night. Real quickly here, this was Hal Gill talking about I asked him about the power play. It started out hot, but it's fizzled since. What did he see? And here's some words that he used to describe the power play.
They came out hot, and then it's kind of fizzled, and I'm not sure why. It became tentative again, and I hate that word on the power play, because if you look around the NHL, there's not a lot of thinking. They're just making plays, and the good teams are moving it so quick. The penalty kills really don't have time to think. I think they need to get back to that. They're going through progressions. I just think they got to put it together and make it quick. Make it snappy, move it around, and shoot.
There you go. Make it snappy, make it quick, move it around, and shoot. You've got tentative is absolutely the word that I would have used. They went 0-for-2 last night against Buffalo. They're 27th in the NHL, 15% on the year. Penalty kill is not all that much better. They did score against on Tuesday night against San Jose, but I think they had like 6 or 7 chances, so that didn't necessarily increase their percentage. I think tentative is the right word for it, and it's almost like they get set up. They've got the opportunities, and then they just pass it around the outside, and it's the same. That's the issue I had last year with this unit, was sometimes, and I think another thing he said there is, don't think, stop thinking, just fire the puck, get the puck on the net, and I do think that will help turn things around for them in this department.
Yeah, I think you can say stop making extra passes and stop shooting so much from the outside to cover the power play. But honestly, to cover the Preds' play in general, we've talked about this for a while. They need more net front presence. They need to be greasier in the slot and get more rebounds and do all those sorts of things. The amount of games the Preds have had this year, and frankly going back a couple years now, where they have 40 shots and the other team has 20, but you sit back at the end of the game and you think, of those 40 shots, how many of them were truly
high danger chances?
High danger chances, you know? How many truly had a shot to go in the net? Because if you just shoot from the blue line all day long, every goaltender in the NHL is going to make that stop. So the Preds have to find a way to be more decisive, to get shots off. When you got a little bit of space and you're in the slot, or you're, you know, the defense is shifting to your side, you got to let that fly sometimes. And I think the Preds are just, tentative is the word, they're just holding on to the puck a little bit too much, or they're making the extra pass, and then all of a sudden the defense is set up again, and now you're forced to shoot it from the outside.
I also think tentative can be a word, and maybe that's not the right word. Passive maybe is the word. Sometimes Ryan Johansson doesn't appear like he is using all of his Ryan Johansson-ness, mm-hmm, and he has lately. He did again last night. He did against San Jose, where he just willed himself, you know, he's like, I'm going to put this in the back of the net. It's going to happen. And when he does that, he is one of the most talented players I've ever seen play in a Preds uniform. He's got the best hands I think anyone have ever played for a Predator, for the Preds. And a couple years ago, it was playoff Ryan Johansson versus regular season Ryan Johansson. And not as bad as playoff Colin Wilson, of course, but he is so good. It's like I expect more on an every shift, every period basis from him. And he's shown us glimpses of that fire in the last couple of weeks. And he's been a reason why they've turned it around. But I just, he's one of those guys, and this is more of a, this is not really about last night. It's more of a broad picture conversation about Ryan Johansson.
Yeah.
He needs to be your top center. Like, Matt Duchene, to me, when I watch him play on every shift, is more of a number one center to me. From an every shift standpoint, every possession standpoint, Ryan Johansson should be. They are equally talented. But there's just, I can't describe it. There's just, you see it and you're like, oh my God, look at that fire from him. And he did it against the Blackhawks in the playoffs, you know, when they went on that run. He was just unbelievable in that playoffs. Yeah. You see it and you go, I need more of that. I need a little bit more of that. You get $8 million a year, I need more of that.
Yeah, and frankly, nothing against Matt Duchene. He's been great, as you mentioned. But Ryan Johansson has a higher ceiling because of his physical tools.
Exactly.
He's just a bigger guy. He can go up against anybody out there, and he can exert his will onto the game in a way most centers in the league just frankly can't. But he doesn't do it all the time. And I get that it's hard to ask that for 82 games, but in some ways, that's draw the football comparison, he needs to do a little of the Derrick Henry and embrace who he is.
Yeah.
Embrace the size. Derrick Henry got really good when he embraced the fact that I'm huge. I'm bigger than anybody. I need to be physical in addition to a running back that can run by. Ryan Johansson's got to do that with his game. He is so annoying to play against because he's so big and he's so physical and the hands are so good and he's got so much skill. He needs to embrace all of that in this game and say, I'm going to do this every single shift, every night, and I'm going to be impossible to play against. And when he does that, that's when he's going to become a true superstar.
And those, that comparison is fascinating because I think they have similar personalities too. They're both Derrick Henry and Johansson are both sort of laid back guys. They don't mind a joke, and they're not these fiery roo rah rah personalities. That's not who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's a very interesting comparison, right? Like the two of those guys, just saying, look at all these physical attributes. Maximize all of them and you will be unstoppable. And Derrick Henry is doing it right now. Ryan Johansson, we've seen it plenty of times. It just doesn't seem to happen for an 82-game stretch. And again, the numbers were there last year. They were good numbers. But we're screaming halfway through the season, shoot the puck, dude. Shoot the puck, dude. Get to the net. Shoot the puck. And it doesn't mean he's not, again, the reason we say these things about guys like Derrick Henry and Ryan Johansson is because they are so good.
Well, and they're the engine, too.
They're so talented.
They're the engine. They're not car three or four. For their teams to get to where they ultimately want to go, those guys have to be great. And we're seeing that with the Titans now. Derrick Henry is the best running back in the National Football League right now. And guess what? The Titans are putting up 30 yards. Oh,
pretty bold statement.
What he said over what he's done over the last month, Derrick Henry has been the best running back in the league over the last month.
And I like that he's being a little more vocal, asking fans to show up. I think taking more leadership, being in the
huddle.
And he
can be because he can do it. Yep. He's done that. And for the last year, he's done it. And the Titans offense looks the part because of it. Ryan Johansson can be that guy for the Preds if he elevates his game to that level.
100% agree. Lee Sterling from Paramount Sports going to join us when we come back. Make a little money for you folks that like to wager here on Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Happy birthday, America. It's time to celebrate and play your favorite Las Vegas casino games by American-owned SpinQuest.com. What's better than fireworks and American pie? Hitting a blackjack in the palm of your hand, and you won't lose your fingers. Over 1,000 games, including slots and live dealers. And $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. SpinQuest.com. Buy American players for American players.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.